This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Fatou Bensouda, is preparing to prosecute a militia leader from the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, accused of enlisting and using child soldiers. Thomas Lubanga Dilo led a militia responsible for ethnic massacres, torture, and rape. Bensouda is the deputy prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, which was established in a 1998 statute and began operating in 2002. It's the only independent, permanent international court to try individuals accused of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Bensouda formerly served as the Attorney General, Secretary of State, and Minister of Justice for The Gambia, and was a senior trial lawyer at the UN's International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. Fatou Bensouda, welcome to Fresh Air. The International Criminal Court is still very young, and the case of Lubanga is the first case to come to trial before the court. It seems to me that would say that indicates that you think this case is very important. Why did the court choose him as the first person to prosecute?
This is the first surrender of a person to the International Criminal Court ever. And these are the first International Criminal Court trial proceedings. If the charges are confirmed, this will be the first trial before the International Criminal Court. And the trial will determine whether Thomas Lubanga Dilo is guilty of the war crime of conscripting children under the age of 15 and using them to participate actively in hostilities. Well, until that time, he is presumed innocent. But however, it will also demonstrate that there will not be impunity for those that are responsible for this type of crimes committed in the DRC. The conscription, enlistment, and active use of children in armed conflict represents one of the most brutal and morally troubling legacies of war. Prosecuting Thomas Lubanga Dilo for these crimes, therefore, will send a signal to combatants all over that these practices must stop.
You describe the enlistment and use of child soldiers as one of the most morally troubling aspects of war today. At the risk of asking the obvious, why do you see it as one of the most morally troubling aspects?
This is a crime that children as young as 9 years are enlisted and conscripted to fight wars. To fight wars that leaves them devastated at the end of the conflict. At most times, it is very difficult to have these children rehabilitated and brought back into their societies. During the time of initiation, for instance, of these children into these armies, sometimes they are made to kill their own families or other members of their family as close as their brothers, just to be able to make them loyal to the perpetrators of these crimes.
How does being forced to kill your own family make you loyal to the militia?
Well, if at the very time of enlisting you or conscripting you to the armies and you are made to kill, for instance, your whole family, sometimes you're able to kill a member of your family who's very close to you and you're taken away and annihilated from this family, You have nothing else to lose, if I may put it that way. You are enlisted and you are initiated into some sort of a new family that you feel you should owe your allegiance to.
I guess also once you've killed your own family, you're capable of killing anybody.
Exactly.
So as part, I know you can't talk about the specifics of this case because it hasn't yet come to trial, but as part of your research for this case, have you spoken to a lot of child soldiers who've had to endure the kind of initiation that you're talking about?
Definitely we have, and it was part of our collection strategy to be able to get in touch with the children directly affected by these atrocities and to be able to compile our case around this crime that is being committed. Yes, we were able to contact them.
And why do militias recruit child soldiers? Are there certain things that children can do or would be willing to do that you can't get men to do in battle?
You know, children have not always fought in battles, of course. They have not always. But recently, we know it has become a phenomenon all over the world. You know, children are made to fight in many wars. And there are many reasons for this. You know, one of them, or some of the reasons why this has happened, I think, over the years, is because there has been a shortage, for instance, of adult soldiers. And communities and militia also try to seek to be able to reinforce their armies by using children. Also, children are more easy to manipulate than adults. And over the years, we've also seen that weapons have become lighter for children to be able to use them easier than before. So for all of these reasons, the militia leaders or the perpetrators of this crime find it more convenient and more easy to use children than to use adults.
Are girls enlisted too?
Girls are enlisted, and it is not only to fight these battles, you know, which is horrible. One other thing they do with girls, which they also do with boys, unfortunately, but more with girls, is that they use them as sex slaves. Girls are used as sex slaves, and they are used to not only fight in the battles, but also to act as wives, you know, within the context of the conflict. You know, in Uganda, for instance, we have collected evidence to show that there were many, many of the girls who were forcibly used as wives during the course of the conflict, wives to the combatants, you know, other people who are fighting the battles. So not only to fight, but also for other things. Some are used as porters, you know, some are used as spies, you know, some are used to work in administration, for instance, but they use them in various ways.
So that means there's probably a lot of children who have been born to girls who were forced to become sex slaves for militias.
Yes, this is one of the phenomena which, for instance, in most of these areas affected by this atrocity of using children have to live with. Because some of the girls, and unfortunately, will bear children. And then that is a whole new dimension to the problem.
So
altogether.
What's happening to those children?
In some areas, the children, for instance, if the mother is rehabilitated, that is the mother, I mean in this case the girl child, is rehabilitated into the societies that they were originally taken from, they go with their children. But as I said, this is another dimension to the problem, because it raises the issues of whether the child will be accepted back into the society together with the mother. You know, how will the child be viewed? Sometimes even the mother has difficulty of accepting the child as, you know, as a child that she wants and she loves. And most of the cases, as you know, it is a child taking care of a child. So the situations that they find themselves are different, but certainly very difficult.
Now, you mentioned that sometimes the child soldiers are rehabilitated back into society. I guess part of the reason why they need rehabilitation is that all emotions like sympathy and empathy have had to be eliminated at a young age in order for them to carry out the kind of killings that they're called on to do.
Well, you know, we're talking about children who should normally be in school, who normally should be with their families, who normally should be leading lives of children. But these are children who are taken away, you know, in most cases forcibly, taken away, made to live in conditions that children should not live in, made to undergo situations that are difficult for them, which is, for instance, fighting, fighting at the front line, you know, or serving as wives. So obviously they do not lead a normal life that a child should live. And they come back to society having done these acts, which are actions of adults, for instance, but being children, you find that, you know, they are living in this circumstance where they've committed these crimes, and at the same time they have the mind of children, but they also sometimes want to be adults. So it's a difficult circumstance for them.
My guest is Fatou Bensouda, the deputy prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fatou Bensouda, the deputy prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. She's preparing to prosecute Thomas Lubanga Dilo, who led a militia in the Congo and is accused of using child soldiers. Now, the part of the legal proceedings that you're in now is that the confirmation hearing is scheduled for November 9th. What's going to happen at that hearing?
At the hearing, the Office of the Prosecutor will unveil for the first time evidence showing that Thomas Lubanga Dilo's organization and himself as the leader enlisted and forcibly recruited children into the ranks of their armed militia, and that he was instrumental in orchestrating these activities. Thomas Lubanga Dilo or his counsel can object to the charges, and they can even challenge the evidence presented by the prosecutor. But if the pretrial chamber determines that there is sufficient evidence to support the charges, the case will proceed to trial.
Where is Lubanga now?
Lubanga is in The Hague. He was transported to The Hague, and he is within the detention facilities of the International Criminal Court.
I would assume that one of your ultimate goals with this trial will be to use it as a deterrent to other militia leaders who would consider using child soldiers. But the thing is, if you're forcing children to fight in a war, you don't have much of a conscience, and you're probably not very concerned with your image in the international human rights community. So do you think a trial like this could really serve as much of a deterrent to other militia leaders?
I think it will. As I said, this is these are crimes that have gone largely unrecognized and unpunished for too long. And I think given that situation, it has come to be commonplace, you know, almost accepted that people should do it. But bringing these charges sends a message that it is wrong, it is a crime, it should stop, and it will be punished. I think this will send the message that has not been sent before.
You know, the International Criminal Court, which we've been talking about, is very controversial in the United States. President Clinton reluctantly signed the treaty that created the court just before the end of his term. Then President Bush basically unsigned it and withdrew from the treaty. And he apparently was afraid, among other things, that the U.S. could be accused of crimes and those accusations could be politically motivated. How do you think the absence of the United States is affecting the power that the court has?
I should start by saying that the court aims at having universality. The more countries sign on to the court, I think the better. That the message is loud and clear that, you know, impunity for these atrocities is being denounced by every country. This is the ideal. But in spite of that, I think the ICC, the International Criminal Court, as it is, has gone on a long way of establishing its credibility, you know. And in spite of the fact that there are still other countries who, for their own reasons, political reasons or otherwise, have not yet joined the court, I don't think it has made it less effective. You know, in a very short time for the court, we have been able to start cases. We have been able to get a person surrendered to the court. And in a very short time, we are going to trial. This is why the court was established, and I think the International Criminal Court is doing just that.
Why did you choose this line of work? Was there anything in your life that led you into into this kind of human rights law?
I will not say that as such, but I'll just briefly tell you that I come from the Gambia, and after my high school, I was working for the courts. And this was at a time when there were not many women in the Gambian judiciary, especially as lawyers. There were quite a few. But having worked working there as a clerk of court, I realized that there were many, many issues affecting children and affecting women, which I think, as a woman, I would be better placed to handle those if I were to qualify to do that. And this was one of the reasons that really pushed me into going into study law, and I did that. I came back and I worked for my government, not immediately as a prosecutor, but as time went on, I realized that, you know, I love to do that. I was very concerned about the violation of rights of others. And I saw myself being placed in a position where I was able to at least officially, in my official capacity, contribute to fighting that. And one thing about, you know, human rights is once you start to do it, you know, you get more and more involved in it, because every day these violations are happening, you know, whether it is at a national level or at an international level. And I think that as a person, if you are placed in a position where you can do something about it, I think you should do that.
As a prosecutor now working for the International Criminal Court and formerly working for the UN's International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, you've had to learn a lot about child soldiers, genocide. You've had to deal with the people responsible or allegedly responsible for such crimes. What does it do to you to be exposed to this constantly as part of your work? Are you able to go home and just turn all those atrocities off and put them away someplace?
I think if as a prosecutor, if you say that you don't carry these stories that you have to deal with every day, if you don't carry them home with you or carry them, you know, with you, I think then you are less of a human being. You know, of course they affect you. Of course you think about them. Every day you're thinking of, you know, what can I do? What can I do as a prosecutor to make sure that this victim that I spoke to today, you know, feels that someone is listening to me and someone is doing something about my plight. So in a way, or in many ways, you know, you walk around with this feeling. You are concerned about them. But in order for you to be also be in a very good position to handle your job or to handle your work properly, you know, you also need to be very professional about it. Because, for instance, there is the presumption of innocence in which these crimes are committed, you have a target, you're going after the target, but until the target is guilty, he is presumed innocent. So for you to be able to do your job properly, you have both to be, you know, professional, but also, unfortunately or fortunately, you also have to have the feeling, you know, of what the victims have suffered.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to say this.
Fatou Bensouda is the deputy prosecutor of the International Criminal Court.